Welcome to Heavens Declare. And today we're talking about the theory of evolution. And going into a little greater detail, we've kind of mentioned some of this stuff over our other programs, but we're going to focus a little bit more today. And we actually have a graphic coming up, you know, that you see so often that they're trying to talk about, you know, how we came from chimpanzees. And these magazines, many times you'll see a picture saying, you know, how we became human, showing a baby and a monkey, or showing a human being and a monkey. It's interesting that Ellen White made a statement where she says that men are so intent on excluding God from the sovereignty of the universe that they degrade man and defraud him of the dignity of his origin. You know, does it give you dignity to be created in the image of God? It does, doesn't it? Or you came from a monkey or a common ancestor. And so some would say, well, slime plus time, you know, equals you, or the goo to you by the way of the zoo. But the Bible says we're made in the image of God. What a fantastic creation God has done with the human being. And to continue on, I was reading from a little book called CC, page chapter 11.3. It goes on to say, he who set the starry worlds on high and tinted with delicate skill the flowers of the land, who filled the earth and the heavens with the wonders of his power, did not fail to create a being worthy of the hand that gave him life. Though formed from the dust, Adam was the Son of God. So they love to talk about chromosomes are the most complex organisms of matter in the known universe, and that we are only, you know, we have 46 chromosomes, the monkeys have 48, we're only two chromosomes away from a monkey. A bat has 44 chromosomes, we have 46, chimpanzee has 48. There are 150,000 base pairs. Now, we've shown you the letter codes in your DNA. There's 6 billion letters, A, C, T's, and G's, 6 billion. It would take up a couple million pages if you were going to sit at a keyboard and type it in. And so we have 6 billion letter codes, we have 3 billion base pairs, okay, the combination of these letters. And there are approximately 150,000 base pairs of sequence in humans not found in chimpanzees. So the chromosome argument does not really carry much water, because you realize that chickens have 78 chromosomes and dogs have 78. So chickens and dogs are identical twins. Another identical twins would be tobacco and chimpanzee. Tobacco has 48 chromosomes, and chimpanzees have 48. So I guess they would be identical twins. Now, we have another graphic coming up. Some scientists at Ames University have developed this device. And I look at that, and I look at those scientists there, and I bet they spent $500,000. You look at all the pipes and hoses and the stainless steel fittings, all that's involved in that cost a bunch of money. But they actually say that they have created two of the chromosomes that have two of the letters, chemicals. Actually, when I talk about the A, C, T's, and G's, okay, in your genetic code, we would see a couple million pages, if you were going to type it out, of at least four letters, A, C, T's, and G's. And that is the message, that is the letter written by God, the message of how every cell in your body works. And so the A, C, T, they stand for chemicals. Cytosine, C stands for cytosine, T is thymine, guanine, and adenine. Those are the four chemicals, actually, that are in your DNA that the RNA, the messenger RNA, reads those letter codes and converts it to protein, which goes and tells all of your cells in your body what it's going to make. Well, they have made cytosine and thymine with this contraption that you saw there, and one other aerosol, which is must have something to do with the RNA. And so these guys took this contraption, okay, I'll call it a contraption, and they say that we have demonstrated for the first time that we can make uracil, cytosine, thymine, all three components of RNA, not all of the components, but they all three are components, okay, in the laboratory under conditions found in space. And they started off with 440 degrees below zero. They put this contraption, this substrate in a chamber where it is irradiated with high energy ultraviolet UV light. And they have photons from the from a hydrogen lamp, the bombarding photons break chemical bonds in the ices and break down the ice molecules into fragments that were then recombined to form new compounds such as uracil, cytosine, and thymine. We have made some of the things that are in DNA with this using what? Intelligence. Did that look like intelligence, those guys, those scientists sitting there with all these hoses and pipes and chemicals? And are they going to make DNA? No way, Jose. The complexity that is in your cells that tell your body what to do is just beyond belief. In your letter codes with these 6 billion letters, A, C, T's, and G's, every cell in your body copies this. Every cell, before it dies, copies that recipe for you, the blueprint. It's a blueprint for you. Every cell has that blueprint. All God needs to do to bring you back to life is have one cell, one of your cells. The message is there. And it's copied. In the copying process of 6 trillion letters to copy, it makes mistakes because we live in a sinful world, because we're exposed to environmental stuff, because of the ingredients we put in our body. All of these things make mistakes, and every cell, when it copies it, will make from between 100,000 and 1 million mistakes. Probably depending on what you had for dinner last night. If you had a hangover, you're going to be on the high side, I guess. Between 100,000 and 1 million mistakes in the copying process of your genetic code. That's why you want to follow the 8 laws of health so you can be on the low side of that equation. But it has spell check. In the DNA, there's spell check. And to have a spell checker, you've got to have a dictionary. We see the same thing on your computer. When you type in a wrong word, it'll never appear on screen sometimes. The spell check goes, whoa, it fixes it at the speed of light. But there's sometimes a spell check goes, ooh, I don't know, you got a problem. We got a problem here, folks. And it'll give you maybe 4 or 5 different words. Well, the same thing, when the spell check discovers a problem in the crossing of these letter codes, in a missing letters, in a covalence bond, in the breaking of the stripes on the band on the DNA, it has 50 genes that are going to fix those. And so with 100,000 to 1 million mistakes, actually 1 in a billion get through. But we're going downhill. We didn't get Adam's gene pool. He lived 930. We didn't give his gene pool. We're going downhill, folks. And so it's been said the DNA is the language of God. You have 23 chromosomes from mom, 23 from dad. God wrote a picture of you in your DNA. He wrote a picture of you, of who you are, your features, your fingerprints, your voice print, your personality. God wrote a picture of you never before seen in the history of the universe, because every one of you are so special, so different. The raw storage capacity of the DNA is staggering compared with even the most advanced electronic and magnetic storage systems. It is theoretically possible to store an exabyte of information if it were coded in DNA in the volume of a grain of sand. An exabyte is roughly equivalent to 200 million DVDs. I've built a replica of the device that Miller and Urey created to do their experiment to see how life could have come from this warm little pond, this primordial soup. And it's a big glass device. I knew it couldn't probably safely ship here from Colorado to 3ABN. So we did a little a video crew came in and did a video clip of the illustration. And so we're ready to do that roll right now about the Miller and Urey experiment. I'm Jim Burr, and I want to take a short clip here talking about how life arose on Earth. Evolution says, well, you know, we don't even want to talk about abiogenesis. We don't want to talk about chemical evolution. Evolution only says how life has evolved through mutations, natural selection. That's how all these 15 million species on Earth came to be. And so they don't even want to talk about it. It's like the Big Bang people. They don't even want to talk about what bang, how it bang, how they say, well, doesn't violate the first law of thermodynamics. You remember the sound of music. Nothing comes from nothing. That's the first law of thermodynamics. And they say, well, no, all the laws break down at the formation and the creation of the universe. Therefore, we can't go back. We want to deal with how the universe has evolved. And so evolution, same way. We don't want to talk about how it could have started, how life could have started. Well, they say, after the Big Bang, you know, the planets formed. And then on Earth, it rained on the rocks. And so we had these warm little ponds, you know, and that's how life arose. Somehow we got amino acids, you know. And so a couple guys back in the 50s, Miller and Urey, did an experiment. They wanted to try to replicate what they thought, you know, life could have, how it could have arisen on Earth. And so they had a device like this. They'd probably say they used intelligence to design this. You know, evolution, oh, we don't want intelligent design. We don't want creation, we want science. But I'll show you how much intelligence went into this. Okay, the first thing they did was they took, and it's a little container down here, they put in methane, ammonia, and water. It was no oxygen. It was they call it a reducing atmosphere with no oxygen. So scientists today say, yes, life could not have arisen on Earth if there was oxygen, because it would have oxidized. And so we need a reducing atmosphere. What's really interesting, if you read the books about supernovas, you'll find they say that supernova exploding in our galaxy created all the elements for life, including oxygen. And yet, in their experiment, they didn't use any oxygen, wouldn't permit any oxygen. But when you get the first living cell, what do you need? Copious amounts of oxygen. So you see some of the problem. So they put in their chemicals here, sealed it up. Then they put a fire underneath here, heated this up to boiling, 212 degrees, okay? And so the mixture that they had, the concoction evaporated and started rising in the tube. It went over here, and then to simulate lightning that would have been around, why they flashed 60,000 volts. They had 60,000 volts in this little spark indicator here. And then it come down, they used 300 below zero liquid nitrogen. I don't know how where you'd find that in the primordial soup, but that was to condense it. And then it came on down, and in this little bottom jar down here, we have tar. What they made was tar, the stuff we make roads out of, okay? But I'll bet if you took biology, they did not tell you some stuff. They did not tell you that what they made was left-handed and right-handed, equal amounts of left-handed and right-handed amino acids. There are 20 amino acids. All the amino acids require left-handed amino acids. We use left-handed rules and right-handed rules for various things. Electricity is one that I was familiar with. And so what they made, if you had even one right-handed amino acid, it would destroy what you're trying to do, create life. You know, I mean, this is presented. If you look in the textbooks, you'll find this is their best. In fact, I was quoting here from Miller's experiment is often attributed as one of the best evidences for the evolution of man in history. This is, folks, this is the best they got. This is the best evolution has, and exclusively, if you check, Dr. Ken Hovind has probably every textbook written in the last 60 years, and he's done a survey, and he says that if you look in the textbook, this is what's presented. It's still, you can go on the internet, read about Miller and Urey, and read about the lies there, the stuff they're saying. I was reading the other day in the origin of Atlas of Life originating on Earth, and they said that DNA was produced as far as I know, is a lie. So what they did here was using intelligence, and the chemicals were not produced by chance. They designed the chemicals. They assumed no oxygen. The chemicals were measured and added at the correct time. Electric spark was administered at the right moment. They mixed the chemicals. The experiment was carefully supervised by scientists. liquid nitrogen, 300 below zero, was used here to condense it. They used a cold trap to freeze the amino acids as soon as they were created. And they removed from his apparatus through vacuum the only way that you could save the amino acids, because they deteriorate apparently pretty fast. Then the reaction was stopped by using barium hydroxide and sulfuric acid. They were added to improve the impurities. And each one of the amino acids in life are left-handed amino acids. So if this is the best they got, they used intelligence. And yet evolution doesn't want intelligence, right? They used intelligence to try to do this. And this is the best. They have not come up with anything better. It's interesting that Richard Dawkins said that he would not be surprised. I should not be surprised if in the next decade or two, it is reported that man has been able to midwife is the word he used, a new form of life in the lab. What Dawkins is admitting, we're not smart enough today, but in the future we might be smart enough to prove it takes intelligence, whatever that word midwife means, I don't know, a new form of life. Folks, evolution, watch our series. We got a lot more to come on this. I want to thank you again for watching 3ABN. Yes, scientists want a naturalistic explanation how life could have arisen. And I was reading something that was kind of very, very, very interesting, kind of funny. And so if you can imagine a group of atheists sitting around a table trying to figure out how life got started without a God, okay? So someone suggests maybe we got here through panspermia. That is the idea that aliens sent DNA and RNA and polymers on rockets and came into Earth on comets and asteroids or something like that. Somebody else suggests, well, maybe it was a warm little pond. Somebody else says, how about spontaneous generation of life? Somebody else says, how about, and these are all these scientists sitting around trying to figure this out, other universes did it, you know, how about aliens? Maybe no one put us here. Okay, and then so somebody says, what about God and a creator? And the response is, leave the room, you are not scientific. I thought it was kind of funny. The enormous amount of activity that occurs inside each of the approximately 100 trillion human cells is shown by the fact that at any instant, each cell contains about 1 billion ATP molecules, 1 billion little motors. Each cell, they're telling us, has a billion of these little motors that produce the energy that run. And these things spin faster than the engine on your car. They turn at 10,000 RPMs. You'd probably blow up the car if you floorboarded. I don't think you can even maybe get your car to 10,000 RPMs. But you have, they say, a billion of these little motors in every cell. Your entire body is like an electric company. It runs on electricity. This produces electricity that makes the DNA. The DNA has the instructions of how to build the ATP motors. This is like a perpetual motion machine, because you can't build the motor without the DNA, but the DNA can't run without the energy that this makes. Yes, our God is an awesome God. And so your entire body is like an electric company. It's like a chemical factory. It's like the transportation grid. It has a communication network, detoxification facility, a hospital, a battlefield. Your cells, your white blood cells, you know, are battlefield, aren't they? All rolled into one. The workers that drive these activities are your cells. And Scientific America tells us that the living cell is more complex than New York City at rush hour. I just think this is amazing. Your entire body is like an electric company, a chemical factory, a transportation grid, a communications network, a detoxification facility, a hospital, a battlefield, all rolled into one. And the workers that drive these activities are your cells. Well, we were showing you my illustration on the Miller and Urey experiment, and if you think about this process that they went through, and you think about how could this, you know, this is using intelligence and using all kinds of machines, and Darwin's warm little pond, how do you get liquid nitrogen, okay, which is what they use to cool it, 300 below zero, how do you get sulfuric acid, barium hydroxide, how do you get ammonia, and ammonia, methane, and hydrogen, and 212 degrees above zero for, you know, temperature. If they say warm little pond, if it was 212, would it rain? It wouldn't rain. You just have fog. 212, it could not rain when it's 212, but that's what they used to do their experiment. Okay, this is the best they've got, okay. So how do you make liquid hydrogen? Well, you need a cryogenic refrigerator, okay? We're talking about the primordial soup where life's supposed to have arisen. And these are the elements you need, but how do you make these elements, okay? You need a cryogenic refrigerator, a turbo expander, a machine shop, and you should be a good mechanic, a talented person to do that. How do you make sulfuric acid? You need oxalic acid, magnesium sulfate, a filtering equipment. You need water, a beaker, a rod, and a glass jar to make sulfuric acid. That's what they used to in that experiment. And then they had ammonia. How do you make ammonia? Well, you remove the sulfur from natural gas with hydrogen to produce hydrogen sulfate, okay? This is all the stuff it would take to start from scratch to get life, supposedly. And they didn't even get life. What they made would kill you because there's equal amounts of right-handed and left-handed amino acids. So you remove the sulfur from the natural gas with hydrogen to produce hydrogen sulfate as a byproduct. Then you remove the hydrogen sulfide by passing this gas mixture through beds of zinc oxide. The zinc oxide will react with hydrogen sulfide to form zinc sulfate and water, a fairy tale. Folks, you can go on the internet, you can make this stuff in your garage. If you're good, you know, you're going to need a lot of pipe and plumbing and heat and all kinds of stuff and chemicals. But you can find out instructions on the internet how to build all the things that Miller and Urey did to prove. In fact, there's now the evidence is that this is still in the textbooks. If you look, Miller and Urey, look it up on the internet. This is still in the high school and college textbooks, the best example. And then we have the new one I showed you from Ames. But you could look it up and see how to make that, all that stuff. But what they did, what Miller and Urey did, now scientists are saying is more evidence that it could not have evolved, that was a failure. There was a cartoon I kind of enjoyed, and this cartoon showed a classroom, and the teacher was saying, first we had the Big Bang, then it rained on the rocks, then we had a warm little pond, then we had volcanic gases and lightning, and all of that equaled DNA, and DNA equals man. Now, class, we don't have any of the details, none of the details of how this all happened, okay, but we are here, so we know that we evolved. And of course, Francis Crick, we talked about before, the guy who discovered DNA knows that it's so complex, there's no way the DNA could evolve on its own and replicate itself, you know? But he says aliens could have sent capsules throughout space, capsules with DNA, amino acids, polymers, to perpetuate life throughout the universe on comets you see how desperate he is to get life going. And of course, Stephen Jay Gould talks about a lizard laying an egg. And you can't get from a lizard to a bird, you can't get from a cow to a whale, you can't get from a human to you can't get a human from a monkey. The Bible says it won't work. 10 times your Bible says they reproduce after your kind. Evolution is based on this warm little pond, And somehow life began in this warm little pond. And then once we got life going, we had mutations in the copying process of these genome and the codes. And every once in a while it makes a mistake, which improves the creature that's trying to evolve. And then natural selection, survival of the fittest, takes over. And here we are, you know, this study the brain, you know, study the eye. You could spend 10 lifetimes studying the complexity, the chemistry of eyesight. You know, it, come on, folks, let's think. Okay. And our time is fast slipping away. With 80 million base pairs in the chromosome, it unzips at hundreds of places. Your DNA is 6 foot long. And to copy that, every cell has to copy that. And to get, if it was just going to copy the full length, it would take you months to copy it. But it cuts, each DNA is cut into like about an inch. So we have 100 copying machines. With 80 million base pairs in a chromosome, it unzips at hundreds of places along the length of the chain. Talk about multitasking, 100 copy machines. Then these ends are spliced back together after they're copied. In the human, copying about 3,000 base pairs per minute are copied. 3,000 base pairs, that's 6,000 letter codes per minute. It would take a month without that 100 copying machines, and you'd be dead. It would take a month instead of the hour it now takes for that. It would take you a lifetime to type your code, to sit at a keyboard and type out a couple million pages of A, C, T's, and G's. It would take you your whole lifetime. But the DNA, the RNA actually, the messenger RNA that copies that, can do it in an hour. Yes, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. Our cells, the cells in our body, are replaced at the rate of millions per second from each division, previous cell, and you can put 100,000 on the head of the pin. Well, we enjoy having you watch Heavens Declare and on 3ABN, and I enjoy sharing this information, so we look forward to next week when we'll be back on the air. Thank you very much.